This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Choose from over 85,000 titles and get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Bobby Blackwolf. More information after the midpoint break. The latest NPD numbers show just how badly the Wii U is doing. Is it time to panic yet? Plus, we talk about how a much-loved developer turned into one of the most hated just by releasing a game. Tonight is February 17th, 2013, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore, what would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
See, if you were here live, you would have heard that was the second time I'd had to do that intro. Because I thought it was the 27th, which it's not. It's the 17th. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a regular edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us live here on the 17th. Here at the Voice of Geeks Network, not the 27th. Head on over to our chat room. Go to live.vognetwork.com. I will be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night there. And you can also check in, just like Fifth Dream and Tiger Claw did. They checked in. Fifth Dream checked in 7 seconds after the show went live. Tiger Claw just 1 second after him. Congratulations, guys. If you're not live and you're not logged into vognetwork.com, there will be a passphrase that you will hear somewhere in the episode that you can put into the site and get the same amount of points and stuff as the people who are here live. We like you too. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, all one word, or you can call in toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can contact me on my website, bobbyblackwolf.com. So, this is one of those rare nights that I actually have to prepare two shows because I didn't know if something was going to happen that was going to be pretty special, and it turns out that didn't. So you're getting the non-special show tonight. But I'm going to tell you what I was going to talk about because it is very timely, and it's one of those things that, you know, if I don't mention it now, it won't have the intended consequence. We were actually going to have a live interview tonight. And we may still have a live interview with this person in the future. I'm going to try to get him on, but it just didn't work out tonight for whatever reason. The man's name is Ken Allen. Now, you, if you're old like me, you probably still don't really recognize that name. But he is actually a legendary game music composer from the late 80s and the early 90s. And he primarily worked on Sierra titles, some of the later ones during their VGA days. Such as Space Quest IV and King's Quest V are the ones that a lot of people know him from. He has a Kickstarter right now, and the Kickstarter is called Under the Half Dome, and it's an album of a lot of his re-recording a lot of his earlier stuff from his PC game composing days. And this Kickstarter is around right now. It's got 3 days to go as of Sunday night. It ends Thursday morning. He's already passed his goal. He's got $18,893 out of a $10,000 goal. You can still back the Kickstarter. There are some stretch goals as well. But it's going to be a huge, huge CD. It's got stuff from Colonel's Bequest, Space Quest IV, let's see, more Colonel's Bequest, some King's Quest V, Jones in the Fast Lane, which is my personal favorite of his. A trailer music he did for a Star Trek game that was never made, Secret of Vulcan Fury, and even some stuff that he was originally supposed to do, Space Quest V, and they went Sierra went in another direction, but he still has his original music that he had originally composed for Space Quest V, and that's going to be on the CD as well. And there are some other some other stretch goals over there at the Kickstarter. So check it out. The link will be in the show notes, and for those in chat, Tiger Claw's already found it as well. And we hope Ken joins us here on the show in the near future, because I love my Sierra games, and I still have my Roland MT32 still works. I actually recorded. I used Vine that new Twitter app that basically shows you video porn and stuff, except I didn't actually have porn on mine. It showed me playing Jones in the Fast Lane, which he did the music for. So that was the show that I had originally wanted to bring you. We will do that interview another time. I've saved up all my questions, and I've already been in talks with him, and we'll try to solidify a time to have him come on and talk all about the fun of Sierra music, Sierra games, and doing music back in the PC days when you had multiple different output devices. You didn't have just a digital audio file that you could play like you can today. And we'll talk to him then, but his Kickstarter, it has 3 days left, so I wanted to go ahead and mention it. And get, you know, if you want to back it, you should back it. I backed it. Let's go ahead and get on to the normal show that I planned. I didn't plan as much stuff this week because I like I said, I didn't really start thinking about what I was going to talk about. But let's go ahead and start off with the previous comments from previous the previous week's episode. I try to do these over at VogNetwork.com. You can actually comment on the story and have your comment read, and some people who even in chat go ahead and talk about this. But we're going to start off with ActDeft, and he said the Rayman Legends story is anger-inducing, and this is about Rayman Legends being delayed on the Wii U because Ubisoft decided to make it multi-platform and have delayed the Wii U launch to be to coincide with the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 launch. It says so ActDev says it's because Ubisoft is really screwing Nintendo over with this, not releasing the title when it should have been out. I wonder if the initial delay had to do something to do with this, though. But at the same time, it makes me happy because I don't have a Wii U, and I don't think I'll get one soon, and hopefully this means we'll also see it for the PC. By the way, if you have not checked out Rayman Origins, it's seriously one of the best platformer games released in recent years, and it's dirt cheap on all platforms, including PC. From what I understand, the initial delay did not have anything to do with this. I bet it was more because they actually needed that time to get the game done. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that if they had gotten it done in time for launch, in time for the November launch, then we wouldn't be seeing this problem. But because it was able to be delayed once, they're delaying it again. Now, there is a story about this that I'm going to talk about. And it's from Eurogamer, and it says that Rayman creator and highly respected game designer Michel Ancel, I think that's how you pronounce his name. I've heard his name enough, and I don't remember how to pronounce it, has appeared alongside members of the Rayman Legends development team in a series of photos protesting the game's delay by company bosses. The game's finished, basically, and the delay was basically just to release it simultaneously with the new versions. Ancel and his team appeared holding a banner bearing the words, "Release Rayman, support Ubisoft Montpellier." And that's a translation. It was in French. Rayman's crying face is seen in the middle of the poster. A speech bubble emanates from his mouth. It simply says, "Please." The background of the poster includes crowds holding banners that read, "Wii U, Rayman, Michel Ancel, and 2802-13, the game's intended release date before the delay." And unnamed, and then this article talks about, you know, the art thing that I read last week. And stuff. And Ubisoft has responded to the fan fury at the decision by promising another Wii U demo. Now, the part I've read other places, it was not in this story, is that it was actually a fan campaign. They went to the Ubisoft studio, and the developers and the lead designer went out to, you know, in support of them. This is not them, you know, doing this for the press. This was another group, and they went out to see them, and then they agree. I mean, it's pretty, you know, I guess it's common knowledge now that the developer's not happy with the publisher for doing this to their game. And so they went out. This was not like the developers of Rayman made these signs and held them up for cameras. These were fans that came to the studio holding the signs, and the developers came out and said, "Hey, that, you know, we agree. We agree. We'll take some pictures." It's kind of a sticky situation. I think it really is now more about Microsoft and about how Microsoft has the policy where they can refuse a game if it appears on another platform first. Now, I was still under the impression that was just for Xbox Live Arcade titles. That was not necessarily for retail titles. But I could see Microsoft maybe trying to strong-arm Ubisoft. And because of the Wii U being the Wii U, maybe Ubisoft didn't need to have their arm twisted all that much by Microsoft. So I think it's a combination of Ubisoft not having as much faith in the Wii U, but more that Microsoft, in order for the game to appear on a Microsoft platform, it needs to appear on the Microsoft platform day one, or they don't get to be on that install base. And I guess they don't see it being worth just porting it to the PS3 and having it come out on the PS3 in September. So, I don't know. You know, obviously nothing has really changed in the past week other than that one picture. So, I don't know what else is going to be come out of that story, if anything. And, you know, who knows? September, it's going to be hard to compete in September. But that's how long it's going to take to convert all the Wii U mechanics, which basically use the touchscreen as the gameplay. It's going to take that long to convert those kind of mechanics to a traditional controller, and we'll see it then. So going another comment that we talked about, Flacco Jones, on the briefly discussed topic of the DICE Awards, I think Walking Dead won the appropriate awards, as did Journey. Walking Dead won mostly story and acting awards, and Journey got a lot for the design, innovation, and artistic awards, as it should be. I think Journey should have won Best Voiceover, because it had none. I loved both games, so no real complaints for me, although after playing the unfinished Swan, it was great to see them recognized with some artistic and design nominations as well. That really is another amazing download game. It would have been cool if they would have snagged one of those awards from Journey, though I understand that Journey kind of dwarfed every download title this year. They did. Journey did everything. It kind of sucks for all the other artsy games because, you know, you had Journey come out and then, you know, Walking Dead for the story. All the other small titles that might have gotten some recognition at the DICE Awards, that didn't happen. It was the Walking Journey Dead Awards. And then the last comment, which is going to go into our next story, is from Critical Myth, who has been critical of the Wii U since before the Wii U was the Wii U. Hate to say it, but as more and more data comes out, I think the poor sales performance of the Wii U is a legit concern, and the dearth of new games is only going to make it worse. It could have a resurgence during the holidays, but that is a long time from now, and there will likely be far more competition than there is now. And that goes straight into our next story from Gamasutra, which they report that while the NPD, that's the tracking data for sales, retail sales in the U.S., no longer provides specific sales number for hardware, a representative does tell Gamasutra that the sales of the Wii U hardware in its first 3 months on the market are down 38% from what the Wii's numbers were at the same point. They're told by someone with access to the data that sales for January were well under 100,000 units. By our estimates, their estimates, sales were somewhere between 45,000 and 59,000 units for the month, which is lower than any of the three previous generations home consoles sold in their worst months, with the possible exception of a recent performance by the original Wii. Similarly, they don't know any software sales numbers, but the NPD's reports, they can see that Wii U SKUs of multi-platform games compare to other SKUs, and it doesn't look good. In instances where a game exists on both the Wii and the Wii U, like Just Dance 4, NBA 2K13, Madden NFL 13, Skylanders Giants, and FIFA Soccer 13, the Wii version came out on top every time. In Madden's case, it was even outsold by the Vita version. The Vita version of Madden outsold the Wii U version. Now, one caveat of that is that's because Madden actually came out in like August or something like that. So, and football season's pretty much over. And, you know, so I think people stop playing Madden. And so I think that's part of it. You know, when your Madden title doesn't come out until November and the season's almost already over, you're not going to get that many people buying that because they already bought it on other platforms, including the Vita. They already bought the Vita version. Why do they need the Wii U version? Is it time to panic for the Wii U yet? I think it's more because just there has not been that much promotion of it. And the games, there aren't that many new games. I have not really wanted a new game that wasn't a virtual console title, which it's not out yet, the virtual console title I'm going to get next. There hasn't been any game that I've really played on my Wii U. It's starting to collect dust just like my Vita did. Now, one thing to note, though, is that we all said the same thing about the 3DS. And from what I understand, the 3DS is actually the best-selling hardware console right now in this month. So we all declared the 3DS dead in the beginning, and here we are, what, a year or 2 years later or something like that? And the 3DS is outselling everything else right now. Now, obviously, we're going to, you know, we don't have the next Xbox, we don't have the next PlayStation or anything like that. That could happen before the end of the year. But right now, your hottest selling console is the one that we declared dead, as we in the gaming media declared yet dead like a year and a half ago. It's The Walking Dead. That 3DS is now walking. It's not dead anymore, and it's going to go get all your DICE awards. What Up G does point out, the 3DS, they dropped the price and brought out some games, and that's how the 3DS did it. So that may be what happens to the Wii U. I hope they, you know, I don't know if they're going to drop the price of the Wii U, but, you know, we need some games, and your third parties aren't doing it. Your third parties aren't releasing games for your system anymore. We learned that. I will say I did get, I did finally pick up Kingdom Hearts 3D. I don't remember if I ever talked about it on the show. I did pick up Kingdom Hearts 3D. Have not, unfortunately, got sidetracked and didn't get to play that much. But I can tell that the drop mechanic that they do in that is going to make drive me up the wall. That has nothing to do with 3D gameplay or the 3DS. That's just the way they designed the game, where you have basically two. They don't tell you this. This is not in the demo. Okay, so in Kingdom Hearts 3D, it's called this drop. It's called drop, and basically you have both. You have two protagonists. And it's kind of like reading a George R.R. Martin novel, where you really get invested in this one character's storyline and where you are, and there's a timer. And then when you hit the end of that timer, you switch to the other protagonist, wherever he is. And then you have to go through that protagonist, and then you, you know, once that timer's done, then you get to go back. It's like reading a George R.R. Martin novel without the killing of Starks. And it's going to get on my nerves, because I get really close to something, and then I have to go deal with the other guy for 10, 15, 20 minutes or whatever, and then I have to come back and try to remember where I was with the first guy. I don't like it. And Tiger Claw does point out there was a Nintendo Direct this week. I didn't watch it, but basically 2013 is the year of the Luigi. If there's anything that can save Nintendo, it's Luigi. Very good, Nintendo. So the story that I'm going to talk about next, bring up, this was actually the story I ran out of time last week, so I saved it for this week, and it's another one of those sad stories. I don't like covering these because I don't like covering when people kind of lose their jobs, but it's kind of a sad footnote to a story we spent a couple weeks talking about last year. The Verge reports that Epic Games has announced the closure of Impossible Studios, laying off the team that had most recently been working to release Infinity Blade Dungeons for iOS. And so, according to the company, to Tim Sweeney, he said, quote, "When former members of Big Huge Games approached Epic last year, we saw the opportunity to help a great group of people while putting them to work on a project that needed a team. It was a bold initiative, and the Impossible folks made a gallant effort, but ultimately it wasn't working out for Epic," unquote. The publisher will give each newly employed worker 3 months of severance pay and has agreed to let them keep the Impossible Studios brand if they would like to continue game development efforts elsewhere. Sadly, the decision appears to be a sudden one. Tweets earlier that week from employees, including Sean Dunn, Ian Fraser, and Jessica Campbell, reveal no hint of impending bad news. As a result of the closure, Infinity Blade Dungeons now faces something of a tenuous future. Epic has said the title has been placed on hold as the company discusses a future for the product project. If you remember, the game was first revealed during Apple's iPad 3 event early last year. Considering the healthy profits Infinity Blade has earned Epic, it's unlikely we'll be seeing it disappear altogether, but whether we'll see Dungeons reach the App Store remains an open-ended question for now. So, Impossible Studios was created from Big Huge Games. Big Huge Games was owned by 38 Studios, which was run by Kurt Schilling and basically owned by the state of Rhode Island. And Big Huge Games actually made Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. They were the development team behind it. And so when they got laid off, Epic came in and hired all of them and put them to work on Infinity Blade. Now, I thought at the time it was going to be an Infinity Blade console game because of the brand has gotten so huge over on the iOS and the mobile side that they would maybe tap them to make a console version. I guess they were making another iOS version. I completely missed the news. Bad me. But unfortunately, that even that didn't work out, and it just took an extra year. But 38 Studios has finally claimed another victim. So good luck to them. At least they're doing it right. They're giving them 3 months of severance pay, and they may all band together and start a new studio and try to go indie or something. I don't know. And so the last thing I'm going to talk about, and I don't actually have like a regular story. I don't like have a story to quote on this. But I've seen this come around, and I've seen this talk about. It's about a game that I never really had any inclination to even talk about. And apparently that's a problem for some people. And the game is Aliens Colonial Marines. And this is what we term a disaster. PR nightmare, PR disaster, everything. So this is a first-person shooter. It's based in the Aliens universe. It's been in development for about 6 years. And the primary developer, it's been published by Sega, and the primary developer was Gearbox Software, which is a very beloved developer thanks to Borderlands and Borderlands 2 and all that stuff. And Randy Pitchford, the CEO at Gearbox, he is a huge fan of the Aliens franchise, so that's why he really wanted to do this. And it came out this week. Reviews were embargoed until the day, the Tuesday, and already we had kind of heard some rumblings. But the game's terrible. Let's just put it that way. I haven't even played it, and I usually don't say games are terrible if I haven't played them. But you know, there's a lot of people I trust that have said the game is terrible. It's a terrible, horrible piece of crap game, which is a surprise because it was so very awesome and amazing in all their preview events, all their E3 builds, all the demos, all the previews that they showed, all of the gaming media outlets. And then the reviews come out, and it's, you know, very poorly rated. And there was one article that I'm not going to say where it's from, because actually the site itself, I checked it today, the site itself actually is trying to distance itself from this article. So I'm not going to actually say that. And the article's not going to be linked in the show notes. But it was actually somebody who blamed me. Not me directly, but me as in the gaming media, and very specifically IGN, for misleading the public about this game, because they did all these previews and said how great the game looked and showed all these screenshots that were fake. And so IGN was obviously on the take, according to this article. IGN was so obviously on the take, and they were covering up and they were misleading the public because Gearbox tried to save face. Now, granted, IGN gave the game a 4.5 out of 10, so obviously they must have been, you know, getting a whole lot of money. But it basically goes on to talk about how previews, how nobody warned the public, nobody warned people to stop pre-ordering it, nobody warned people not to buy it on release day. They waited until after the game was released. Yeah, okay, sure, there's an embargo, but why don't you break that embargo? Why didn't you break that embargo and do your journalistic integrity and tell us all the game sucked? And unfortunately, that is not something that you can really do, especially if you're a smaller site like us. You know, here at VOG, when we do have reviews, we do respect embargoes. We have worked under embargoes multiple times. And, you know, it's kind of sucked because sometimes, like, the embargo is Monday morning at midnight, 12:01 a.m. Eastern, and I can't talk about it on my show. Because they even that 4 hours, that is too early to talk about certain things. So we respect the embargoes, and it's because, you know, that way we are able to bring you that content. If we break embargo once to anybody, we will never be able to get that kind of content to you again. We could still bring you the content, but it would be a week or two after the game comes out and you've already made your purchasing decision. So embargoes exist partially to give everybody kind of equal footing, or unless somebody, I guess, pays for an earlier exclusive or something like that. But you don't break those embargoes. I know that, you know, in a perfect world, yes, you would break the embargo and tell everybody, hey, this game sucks, but then you'd never be able to tell anybody that again, ever. Because no game publisher or PR person is ever going to trust you again to respect their embargo. So they'll give that review copy to somebody who will. They're not going to take that review copy away from a site or from a reviewer for saying their last game sucked. I've never had that happen. But if you say the game sucked before you agree that you would talk about it, then yeah, you're never going to get anything again, and it's a very small industry. You piss one person off, you're pretty much done with the rest of the industry. So it's kind of interesting that he's, you know, saying that IGN was in on the take when even IGN has put up articles saying they were duped. And they actually showed side-by-side comparisons. They're like, this is the screenshot we were shown 6 months ago, and this is how it actually looks on the PC, that same scene. It's completely different. And so there, a lot of gaming media outlets have felt duped by Gearbox, and it's a very trying time for them, and it sucks because I do have some have gotten to know a couple people personally at Gearbox. I have not spoken to them about this at all. I have not even approached them. But man, it's got to suck when, you know, the entire internet wants you closed, and there are lawsuits. People are talking about lawsuits over this game. Like, if you thought people complaining about the ending of Mass Effect 3 was bad, imagine that people are wanting to sue you for releasing the game, and it's not the game they expected. So it's kind of crazy. And there are actually some stories out there from anonymous throwaway accounts on Reddit. One's a Gearbox developer basically saying, you know, they outsourced a lot of the development to this other company called TimeGate Entertainment, where, you know, the entire single-player campaign was done by this other developer, and this part was done by another developer. All Gearbox did was the multiplayer. And about how they kept pushing it off. Like, Gearbox kept delaying it to work on Borderlands and Borderlands 2 and stuff. And finally, Sega was like, hey, you know, we're going to sue you if you don't get it out in first quarter. And so they basically had to release it. And there were a lot of bad decisions or something like that. And basically, that person pointed all the blame at TimeGate. Well, then another throwaway account in typical Reddit fashion comes on and says, I'm a developer at TimeGate. Don't blame us. It was Gearbox's designers that decided everything. We just did what they told us, and they were not they were not very good at this either. So there's a lot of finger-pointing going around in anonymous comments. Sega hasn't really commented. Gearbox really hasn't officially commented, other than Randy Pitchford doesn't like to be called a liar, because a lot of people are saying that he himself is a liar because he talked about things in an interview 5 years ago that wound up not being in the final game. So it's another one of those, you know, you got to be careful what you say to the press, because people will twist it, and we're in a litigious society, so I'm sure we are going to hear about a lawsuit somewhere. It's going to get thrown out of court, but we're going to... Some lawyer is going to make some money from somebody about this. All because they released a terrible game. Now you can get sued for releasing a terrible game. I know that sounds great in theory, but that's a little bit too far. Doomplague says, we just did what they told us does not work well in game development. Well, when your designer works for you, you basically do what the designers decide. You don't, you know, when you're just the programmer and stuff. Havoc 978 says, aliens must have gotten the Duke Nukem Gearbox. Even though, you know, WhatUpG says, how many different people in studios worked on Duke Nukem Forever? That was the 3D Realms game that Gearbox just finished for them. But a lot of people are thinking that outside of Borderlands, Gearbox is a crap developer and should be, you know, everybody should be fired and hopefully not rehired in the game industry. Like, there's a lot of anger and vitriol against Gearbox for this, and like, there are people calling for, you know, massive layoffs at Gearbox, and they, you know, want to blacklist all the developers that worked at Gearbox so they don't work in the game industry again and don't bring this kind of and that's stupid. So we're going to take a quick music break, and then we will take your calls, and you can talk about anything going on in the gaming industry. We can talk about any of that and or anything else you want to talk about in the gaming industry. I don't know. We're going to take this music break. It's not going to be on the podcast, but we're going to take a music break. I need to go reach for a water, and it's out of frame. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
This is the voice of Marty McFly. When I am not traveling back in time with Telltale Games, I'm listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show.
That's not Walking Dead, but that was another Telltale game. Thank you, AJ Locasio, for that. Welcome back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. You do not have to sound like a celebrity to leave a bumper. All you got to do is leave a voicemail on the toll-free line or by sending me an MP3 to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. You can get that 30-day free trial, get a free audiobook, and that's yours to keep, even if you cancel before the trial is over. I bet the book that I referenced earlier with all the multiple protagonists and stuff, I bet that's an audiobook, and it's probably even harder to follow. I don't know. It's a great book anyway, if you can get in through it. But you can make that your audiobook. All you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/BobbyBlackWolf. So the phones are now open. Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. You can call in. True earlier asked me about my thoughts on Destiny, which was revealed today. That is Bungie's new multi-platform IP, and basically all we know about it really is that it's a first-person shooter that's always online with a persistent connection. And that's about all we know. And it's kind of funny because they actually did have a whole bunch of game journalists fly up to Seattle to learn about the game, and they didn't actually get to see the game. Like, they brought them up to tell them about the game and show them the video documentary that everybody saw. And that's it. But they told them about it. They didn't get to see it. They didn't get to play it. They were just told about it. I would be pissed if I, you know, flew all the way across the country to see a game and not even get to see the game, just to hear them talk about the game. True says, isn't Dust like that always on? Yes, it is kind of like Dust 514, which is the CCP Games EVE Online, first-person shooter in EVE Online. So I think it's going for that. And so I think it's funny. Everybody's like, oh, this is so revolutionary. And oh, my God, I can't believe all this. When I'm like, CCP's doing it right now. It's an open beta. Every PlayStation 3 owner can play it for free right now. Go for it. Also, people are still talking about the Gearbox stuff. And Bacon Bits wanted me to, about the Aliens Colonial Marines. Did I talk about how supposedly Gearbox used all those funds for Aliens on Borderlands 2? That I have heard that. And, you know, that's basically just what some people are saying. Everything I've been saying has not been confirmed by anybody, but it's out there. It is what it is. We do have a call here on the line. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, what's up, Bobby? It's Breakman.
Breakman, what's going on? Did you actually think of something to talk about this week?
What? Is that why I called in?
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned your favorite developer, so I assume that's why you just called in.
Yeah. That's kind of sad, because they're not my... Well, Bungie, yes.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Gearbox.
No, I was talking about Bungie.
I kind of feel bad for what's going on with Gearbox, because I really like Gearbox. I think they've done a lot of good work. I know I was one of the people who was making fun of Borderlands before I played it. And
yeah.
Then, you know, I've been hooked on it since.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's not the only good game they've done. It's just...
So but obviously, you probably called in to talk about all about Destiny.
Okay. So, come on, talk about all about Destiny.
Yeah, so what do you think about what Bungie and now, or what everybody talked about today with Bungie? What do you think of Destiny?
Let me see. Oh, from everything they talked about Destiny, I'm going to go and pre-order it right now.
Okay.
It sounds like the best thing ever made. They haven't said anything about it. I have no idea, you know?
They've,
I'd like to see more.
Yeah, they
showed nothing.
Yeah, and they didn't even show, like, they had Adam Sessler up there and Jeff Keighley up there and all these big names, and they still didn't get to see it. Adam Sessler's like, I don't know why I went up there. They just told me about it. But it's Bungie. Everybody's going to go. I mean, I know you were kind of, you know, joking about, oh, I'm going to pre-order right now. There are people out there that are probably like, I want to pre-order that right now. And you know the Evil G is like, we're going to make up a release date so people can pre-order it right now.
Yeah, jeez. I mean, if they're not even showing anything about it, it doesn't sound like it's going to be anything that's going to be released anytime soon, you know?
I think it's going to be a next-gen. I think it's going to be a next-gen title.
The Xbox 666 and the PS4.
Xbox Infinity, or I don't know.
Yeah. The next box.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've liked the work Bungie's done in the past with Halo, but I mean, before that, they did Myth and
Marathon.
Marathon series. Myth was kind of different. That's actually, like, I would like to see more games like that. In the Halo type series, like Halo Wars, but that's, you know, mm-hmm. not here or there.
Yeah.
What with Destiny, I mean, it looks like, from what they're talking about anyways, it sounds like it's going to be more Halo-ish.
Yeah, it's going to be a massively online Halo. And Tiger Claw, it's kind of cute, Tiger Claw says, wait till E3. I'm sure they'll show you gameplay footage or something. No, they're not. You know as well as I do, they're going to show more pre-rendered stuff that's going to look like it's in-game footage, but it's really pre-rendered. You know they're going to do that. They did it in the last generation.
For a month, they're going to keep telling you, come, we got something big coming. We got something big coming, and you get that minute of tech video.
Well, and here's the other thing, is that, you know, because we were looking back at the, you know, since we're coming up on a new launch cycle, I was looking back at some stuff on the previous launch cycle, and I found the original Xbox 360 trailer of Madden 06. Okay? And they said this is how Madden's going to look on the next-gen systems. And it looks amazing. It still doesn't look like that today in 2013. It was amazing looking.
Do you remember how bad that Madden was, too? That Madden was absolute garbage.
It was.
You couldn't even challenge calls in it.
I know.
It looked like dog crap. It looked like an upscale version of the Xbox.
Yeah, and it was. Because that's what they were working with. But they had this trailer that said, this is how Madden 06 is going to look. And it looks phenomenal. It's amazing. And it still doesn't look that good. Like, Madden 13 didn't look this good. And so we're going to see that again. And, I mean, you know, we had the whole Killzone thing with the PlayStation 3 where they had that pre-rendered trailer that looked like it was in-game. And, you know, then they, you know, tried to make Killzone really look like that. But we're going to see that a lot. So even, like, if they do show Destiny, quote-unquote, gameplay, I'm still not going to believe it unless I'm actually sitting there playing it, watching it in real time, which is most likely not going to happen because I get denied for E3 again.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hate it happens at E3 every year. There's always game, just video footage instead of actual gameplay footage, and people get excited about it. I mean, look at how excited people were for the Star Wars Old Republic. Mm-hmm. Just the cutscene videos. People were going crazy, like, they want this game. Now it's going free, or it's gone free to play because nobody wanted it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wanted it, and I played it for 2 months and didn't pay for it again.
I started downloading it. That's about as far as I got.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's...
I might...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I might try and download it all the way one day if I'm really bored, but I'm not going out of my way for it, and it's free. So,
yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, they show this gameplay footage, and even then it can be deceiving because the E3 demo of Aliens Colonial Marines isn't in the game. That level just doesn't exist. That was specifically, it was specifically for E3. It was highly scripted. Basically, they had put it out there, and they had hoped that they would able to actually get the game to react in that way, but it was highly scripted. And that's actually what you see when I know you've never been to E3, but at E3, a lot of times, if you don't get to play the game, they have somebody play the game for you. And, like, a lot of the big games did this. Saints Row the Third had this. Skyrim had this. Fable the Journey had it, and all this stuff, where people, and Call of Duty, they always do this with Call of Duty, where they have the developer play the game. And it's because the game is specifically timed and looked to do exactly what the developer's doing. Whereas if you or I sat behind there, we might do something that hasn't been fully coded in. We may go left instead of right. And so they have the illusion of choice. Yeah, in the final game, you'll be able to go either way. But in that demo, you can only go this one direction. And you can only do this thing, and they want you to look here and here and here, and the developer knows that. It's very scripted, and they're acting out instead of actually playing the game. They're actually acting out a series of commands. Yes, it's real. It's rendered in real time, but it's not the final version of the level. And so they do that a lot, and they make these specific demos for games, and that's what Aliens Colonial Marines did, and that's what all the sites reported on, and it turns out none of that stuff was actually in the final game.
I heard they brought a character back to life or something to the game, and that has people pissed off too.
Yeah, I don't know that much of the mythology.
It sounds like they did everything they could to just make people mad with this game.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds like a colossal series of mistake after mistake.
I don't think you know, nobody goes in, and you know, there's a lot of people that will say this is nobody goes in wanting to piss off the consumers. Nobody goes in
right.
and buys
I imagine nobody who's making a game is going to say, I want to make the worst game I can. I'm pretty sure everybody wants to say, who's making a game that's a first-person shooter, says, I want this to be better than Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Screw Call of Duty. I'm going to be better, you know?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, I think what he did is they brought that character back to give that holy crap moment, and hopefully the fans, they were hoped that maybe the fans would see it their way as well,
mm-hmm.
and say, oh my God, I can't believe that. Oh, wow, that's awesome. And instead, the fans were like, no, why did you do that? That was not good. And I think what it was is just they thought this would be something really cool, and when really the fans were like, no, maybe a minority thought that was cool, and unfortunately the minority were making the game.
Yeah, and so they pissed off Alien fanboys too, so
yeah.
You got game fanboys pissed, you got sci-fi fanboys pissed.
Mm-hmm. And BaconBit says... BaconBit says, are you sure Gearbox wasn't saying that with Duke Nukem? Let's make that a crap game. I do know for a fact they were not trying to make a crap game. It's just they were handed an almost finished game, and they basically just released what was originally designed by 3D Realms. They didn't go in there saying, we're going to make a crap game. 3D Realms didn't go in there saying, we're going to make a crap game. It turned out to be crap, but nobody wants to be known as the guy that made the crap game. Just ask John Romero.
Yeah,
he
nobody
hates
wants
it.
To be known as the Naughty Bear developers.
Right.
Or the Darkest of Days developers.
Well, to be fair, the Darkest
of
Days...
Nobody wants to be...
The Darkest of Days developers, they're like actually like leaders in like the casino game genre. So like they're doing well. They just tried to branch out, and then that failed, so they went back to do what they're actually good at.
Well, from what you guys were talking about when you brought that game, showed that game off, it sounds like they were really trying hard. They just, fell short.
Yeah.
The Naughty Bear guys, I don't know. Like, they made a sequel and everything. They worry me.
And an iOS version. There's an iPhone version.
God.
It looks like Pac-Man. It's awesome.
Naughty Pac-Man Bear?
Yeah.
Ugh.
All right. Thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
Alright, Bobby, later.
So we're going to take another quick call. If anybody else wants to call in, Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. We are almost to the end of the show, so we're not going to wait too long for people, but I'm going to give people enough chance to call in. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase CAT. RDG Singe says, just ask Howard Scott Warshaw. He's known for making not just the worst game on the Atari 2600, but the best one on Atari 2600. He also made Yar's Revenge, which a lot of people consider to be the best game. Which is kind of funny. I actually got a Kickstarter game. I actually kickstarted the Atari 2600 game Star Castle. We talked about it on the show, but it was the one, and I actually got the tier that actually has the light-up cartridge that has LEDs in it, so whenever you get hit or the enemy in the middle gets hit, it actually lights up, and it blinks and stuff, which is really cool. That finally came, a month ago and stuff, but Star Castle was actually the game that Howard Scott Warshaw tried to make when he made Yar's Revenge and realized he couldn't do it on the Atari 2600. They said it was impossible to make that game on the 2600, so... A lot of the aspects of Star Castle is in Yar's Revenge. Star Castle was an arcade game that they were trying to port. And so that's where D. Scott Williamson, who made the Kickstarter campaign, he's a homebrew developer now, he got the idea, I'm going to accept that challenge, and he actually was able to make that work. So Star Castle is now, there's a ROM you can go get and play in Stella. But yeah, I just got that. And if you have Vine and you follow me on Vine, there's a 6-second Vine of me playing Star Castle with the blinky lights, as well as Halo 2600, which still to this day is my favorite Halo game ever. It's the best Halo game ever made. That's it. Nobody else called in. So we're going to go ahead and get on to what's coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network. Three people out in Sacramento, California that talk about games for a lot longer than I do. It's Orange Lounge Radio. We are calling them on Skype, and Skype is just not letting them in, and then eventually Skype will allow us to talk to them. Sacramento, are you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing good.
So you're addicted to Vine. I keep seeing you've done some posts on there, but
I've done 6 posts in 2 weeks.
Well, that's more than a lot of people. It's you and Godfrey are the only ones that are posting content on there. I think I did like 2 vines ever. So
yeah, it's Bobby Blackwolf is the vine on this. And I actually posted one today because, you know, I thought I was going to have the interview. So I was, you know, doing some promotional stuff. But we'll get him on soon because that would be an amazing. I know Alan was very excited once he learned that what didn't happen.
Alan's a huge old school Sierra game fan. And, well, I mean, I am too. Like, you know, Jones in the Fast Lane, I seriously thought I was the only one that knew about that game. But I remember that one very well from when I was a kid. I used to play it at the little shop, like back when they actually had independent stores that sold computer software. That was the first place I ever played Civilization. I played Jones in the Fast Lane there, and then I played Civilization there, and just love, because, like, we would go there after school, and, man, we could hang out there for, like, an hour. Like, I'm really surprised they wouldn't, like, throw us out.
And here's the thing. Here's what attracted me to this Kickstarter. Okay, so he's got this Kickstarter for Under the Half Dome, and one of the stretch goals, which, unfortunately, I don't think he's going to hit, and I got to look this up, because I want to say it right, so I've got to go back over here and look it up, but where is it? $25,000 if he hits that, which he's not. He's at $18,000. He's got 3 days left. Live musicians on key tracks. So he wants to have there's a couple like a violin virtuoso for King's Quest V and stuff. But he wants a full marching band to perform a song based on the theme to Jones in the Fast Lane.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, if I could like just put it up over $25,000 just for that alone, I'd do it.
You could volunteer the Falcons drum line to participate.
Yes, we would do it. I would try to. I mean, well, I don't know. I know how much we charge.
Right.
So we'd have to have that $25,000 to get up there to do it. But yeah, I mean, this is a really neat project, and yeah, I mean, I love Jones and the Fast Lane. I'll still play it today.
I'm surprised nobody's tried to do something newer with it. Like I realize, you know, a lot of the Sierra stuff. Like, I guess, is owned by who?
Activision.
I'm sorry?
Activision? Yeah.
Activision. That's right. It was through a series of acquisitions. Like, it was a Vivendi, and then, you know, but anyway. And then Activision's just sitting on it. Like, they're not really doing anything.
And here was the funny thing, and, you know, if I do have him on, I'm going to have him explain this a little bit more, so this is kind of a teaser. Originally, he thought he couldn't actually use his tracks. You know, he had to do stuff inspired by his own music because Activision owns a lot of the old music. And it turns out he can actually do the exact same thing Jonathan Coulton did to do Baby Got Back. And he can get that compulsory license, and do a cover. He basically is covering his own music that Activision owns. And that's how he's doing it. Yeah, Glee will take it all.
There you go.
So that's because originally he thought he wasn't going to be able to do anything. Like, he couldn't actually do anything from Space Quest 4 or King's Quest 5 or anything like that. And now he realized, oh, I could just pay this static license and just cover my own tracks. Score.
I always thought it was interesting how kind of back in the day a lot of these old games were talking about, you know, now in this day and age we're kind of used to everything sounds the same. And all the games you play all sound the same because they all have, you know, highly compressed, you know, CD quality, sometimes beyond. But, you know, back when Sierra was the rage, you had to pick, you know, do you have a Sound Blaster or do you have a MIDI or an ad lib or do you have to rock the PC speaker?
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing what some people could do with a PC speaker, though. There was some games that had some good stuff on PC speaker.
Yep. Yeah. You know, doing like trills and stuff, you could actually make it sound like it had more than one voice.
Right.
And stuff. There were a lot of shortcuts and stuff. And that was one of the things I was going to ask him about, too, is, you know, where you started and how you, you know, decided what to strip out for each iteration all the way down to the PC speaker. So,
yeah, a game like Jones sounds, you know, the one you played, I imagine, was the MIDI one because that's the one is near.
That's the MT32. Yeah, that's the high end.
Roland high end. But, you know, I was rocking an Adlib card back in the day. I was the cool kid because I actually had a sound card in my PC. Yeah. And we were rocking the Adlib. It sounded totally different. I'm like, I know this song, but it was totally different to me.
Yeah, I had a Sound Blaster as a kid. I did not get the Roland MT32 until like 10 years ago or something. I finally got one on eBay.
Nice.
Just because it was the one thing I always wanted from my parents. And they were like, I don't see why we need to spend $500 on something that makes music come out of your computer. And so they never got me one. So I showed them and I got one for $70 on eBay and hooked it up to an old machine, and I was playing it today. I was like, yep, still works. Awesome.
That is exactly why I bought a Nintendo 64. Mm-hmm. My parents were like, "You're too old. You need to focus on school and college and stuff." And so the minute I was able to afford one myself, I bought one.
Yep.
Great.
It's all rebellion against your parents.
Mm-hmm.
I am supposed to ask you.
Wait, I was just going to say, it's better that we're buying Nintendo 64s and rolling cards and not crack.
That's right. Could be worse. So I'm supposed to ask you, how's Ni No Kuni doing?
Ni No Kuni's great. I play it every day.
How's Ni No Kuni doing?
Fantastic. Ni No Kuni is fine. Aging very well.
How's it going?
Great. There's a free thingy-mabobber that just came out on the marketplace this week. You know, the thing, the guy thing, thingy.
Are you hiding something from me?
No. Why would I hide anything from you?
Because Alan told me to ask you, so I figure you're hiding something.
Well, Alan's sleeping on the couch tonight, so that's that. All right. Maybe I haven't played Ni No Kuni in like a week and a half, but there's so many other games I've been trying to play, like World of Warcraft and Path of Exile.
And here's a game I've actually been playing. It's an indie game. And so maybe we need to try to get him on Vogue somehow. The new game, it's on Xbox Live Indie Games, was just released last week, and Microsoft actually put it up on the main page for the indie games. Arcade Craft. So what this game is...
Yeah, I heard about this. Go ahead.
And what this game is, it's kind of like Game Dev Story on the iPhone or anything like that. That's like you're running something and stuff, except you're running an arcade. And it starts in 1980, and all the trends kind of mimic the arcade trends. So you're basically buying arcade games and, you know, maintaining them and, you know, trying to keep your arcade current and stuff. And you know, games will get released and then become classics, and you'll have sequels of games and all that stuff. So it's a neat little strategy game based on doing an arcade, and it's only 240 space bucks.
There you go.
And so it's getting a little repetitive now. It's like I'm in 1983, and I'm like, okay, I'm kind of doing the same thing. Because basically what you're doing is you're going around just collecting coins and stopping idiots from breaking your machines when they get mad. And that's basically most of the gameplay. So it does get a little repetitive. But it's like it's one of those, I want to see what games come out next. You know, what happens when I get to 1992? When's the Street Fighter clone coming out?
So it goes that far with it?
I guess. I don't know how far it goes. Like, I've only gone to, like, 83. So I don't know. I've only played it for 2 hours. Which is probably more than you played Ni No Kuni this week.
Ah, shut it.
So what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight?
Well, obviously, more rumors, you know, our favorite thing in the world. But sounds like some of these are a little more founded when it comes to the PlayStation 4. Some pictures seem to present a pretty compelling argument for what the future of gaming might look like. We're going to give our own little spin on what's going on with Destiny. And you won't believe what company laid people off. I mean, maybe you've heard it already. But there was a game company that did layoffs this week that I don't think anybody was expecting. Flow of the industry.
Yeah, I've heard about that one. I will save the spoiler for you guys.
Yep.
And so Orange Sounds Radio is coming up next, and there's going to be no Ni No Kuni talk on there at all.
Absolutely wrong, because special guest Flacco Jones is here in studio, and Ni No Kuni I have not been playing. He's been picking up the slack with. So
it's still a waste of time.
Stop it.
Still a waste of time.
Oh, jeez. Ours never a waste of time, so stay tuned.
Yep. Never a waste of time, Orange Sounds Radio. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, so you can catch us live and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or a bumper for use in the show. Toll-free number is 1-888-36-GAME-1, or email me an MP3, bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. I'm on Facebook as Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf, Twitter and Vine as Bobby Blackwolf. Vine, that app is terrible with caching, though. It saves everything. I think I had like a gig of cash, and there was no way to get rid of it in my iPad, so just be aware of that if you do use Vine. But if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. This is one person talking, so it may not be for everybody, but it's probably for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters, so thank you very much, Dark Soccer, Dark Titsia, DC Nate, Hecht, Misty, Ronma, Rob Roberts, The Rob D, VXJSNXV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc 978, Shadow Next Gen, Loki, Act Deft, AKVG Games, Alan Alchemy, Bacon Bits, Boshka, Bob Coffee, Brad from Pod Culture, Breakman, Broken Sidewalk, Burr, Da Blue Guy, Degenerate Johnny, Dungeon Buster, Evil, Flacco Jones, Gamer Girl, GK128, Akuma JP, Immortal King, Jlinx, Kazin, Mako, Matt Cube, Melted General, MXC, MXT, Orin G, Porkchop, Raginator, RDG Singe, Sean, Technus, Tigerclaw, Toagak, True, Wylan, What Up G, Winter, Zappy, and Zether. So that is it for me. I am back. We'll be back next week. We'll actually know more about the next PlayStation, so I will actually be able to talk about it and not have to sit there and say, I don't like rumors. Speculation. Maybe I'll even get the intro done in one take. That'd be great. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.